Game on. On 2FM.
Yes, hello there. Good evening. It's great to have your company on this Friday. Lots to get through this evening in terms of news headlines. The swimming is just underway. The finals of the under 23 European Swimming Championships at the National Aquatic Centre in Dublin are underway in the past few moments. So we'll keep you updated with them throughout the hour. Switzerland have won the Aga Khan Trophy. Unfortunately, Ireland did not retain it, so Brendan McCarthy will be dialing in shortly with that, and we'll keep you up to date with any medals in the UCI Cycling World Championships as well. There was a top 20 finish for Ryan Mullen earlier on in the men's elite road race. Alan Colley is in studio. Alan, how are you, sir?
I'm good, Shane. How are you?
I'm very well. Dublin Derby Day. I'm very, very well.
You're a happy man.
I'm a happy man for now, yeah. Until we get into the League of Ireland chat, and then I start going about predicting Rovers going to bat their shells and everything else.
Predictable in that regard.
Yeah, exactly. I think Neil Ewing, our GA pundit on the show, has already predicted that that's going to happen, and you're going to be talking up United and everything else when we're chatting Premier League. So we'll get to that.
I think Neil was bang on with you. I'm not sure if he's bang on with me talking up United. I don't know.
That might have been tongue in cheek. Before we chat Premier League and League of Ireland, the FIFA Women's World Cup. This morning, Sweden held off a late Japan fight back to reach the semi-finals of the World Cup with a 2-1 win, leaving the tournament without a former winner in the last four. 5 days after ousting four-time champions the United States in the last 16, the Swedes dominated the 2011 title winners for most of the evening to set up a semi-final against Spain on Tuesday. Spain, they needed an extra time winner to defeat Netherlands 2-1 after the Dutch scored in the last minute to take it to extra time. So drama aplenty, Alan. What did you make of it all?
Yeah, it was really good. Obviously, going into this stage of the competition, Shane, the best I had seen so far was probably Japan. So they were favourites against Sweden. But as you rightly say there in your report, and I watched the game, Sweden dominated them for large spells, probably for the guts of 70-75 minutes. And they looked like they were coasting in terms of obviously getting the job done, and it would be 2-0. But then Japan rallied, they got a late goal. And it was a nervy finish, to be fair, then they put a bit of pressure on Sweden. But I think the best team on the day won. As I say, Japan have had a great tournament, but Sweden are very, very strong, very powerful, very physical.
It was the first time Japan looked rocked.
Yeah, it was. And I just think they got overpowered, Shane. Japan are very sharp, very fast, very quick, technical players. And as I say, in the tournament so far, they've been brilliant. But I just felt Sweden overpowered them physically today. And Sweden are a good side, as we know, but just were just very, very strong as well in how they went about it and totally dominated from start to finish. Ilestad got the first goal. I think that's our fourth of the competition, the centre half. And then there was a penalty, which... it's a modern day penalty, if that's the best
phrase
to
use. That's a very good description. Very good description, yeah.
It was, and I felt very, very, very sorry, really, for Nagano, because it was a crowd of bodies in the penalty area. And as it came through the bodies, there was three or four bodies in front of her. She kind of had no time to react, and her hand is kind of, I suppose, just a yard or two away from her body. It wasn't like it was stretched out and she's trying to block a ball or anything, but it does hit her hand. It's clear as day it hits her hand. I felt it was very, very soft. I'm old fashioned in the way that you want to see penalties given for intentional handball. I know it's very different now and we just have to deal with that and get on with it. So that was the penalty, and at that stage Angladal put them 2-0 up for Sweden, and as I say, they were coasting at that stage, Shane, but Japan rallied. But I think the best team won.
Okay. You called it at the start of the tournament. You said Spain for the tournament. They're still in the tournament, but just about.
Yeah, just about, Shane. Yeah, again, a dramatic finish. They went 1-0 up, laid on a penalty from Caldente. And at that stage, you're thinking a late penalty, 81st minute, they'll get the job done in 90 minutes. But of course, as we've seen in a lot of games so far in the tournament, plenty of drama. And of course, a late equaliser from Netherlands, that brought it into extra time. And then I was glad that Spain went on and won, because I did tip them at the start, and they were very, very good in the opening group games as well, despite the fact that they lost heavily to Japan. But they bounced back really well from that in their last 16 game, and then obviously won today as well, puts them in the semi-final. And it's a big win for them, it really is. And the girl who got the winner, Paralelmo, I think you pronounce it, Shane. Yeah, yeah. But watch out for her. She's going to be an absolute star.
Teenager.
Yeah, she's only 18 years of age, plays for Barcelona. I think she was a fantastic athlete before she got involved, obviously, on the football side of things. So I think she was destined for stardom no matter what sport she took up. And as I say, she got the winner, but she is an absolute star. Plays on the left-hand side, can flick over to the right as well as a winger. But athletically, she's so powerful, quick, fast, dynamic, and technically very good as well. So it sets it up lovely now for Spain in Sweden, and of course the other two games are tomorrow, and I'm really looking forward to them.
Call them for me. So Australia, France, 8 a.m. tomorrow, and England, Colombia, 11:30 tomorrow. Who's going to prevail?
I think in the first one I'm going to go for Australia, because I covered the game the other day, and despite the fact that Norway dominated for large spells, I just felt that they were just really well set up, Shane, and I think they've picked up 12 wins out of 14, so they've real momentum behind them, and in those wins as well I think there's 9 clean sheets, so they're a really strong outfit, very formidable, and of course they've Sam Kerr back, and Caitlin Ford was outstanding in the last game as well, and they play on the counter attack, and that's where they're very, very dangerous. Balls over the top to her. She was electric in the game the other day, and I just think they have serious momentum built up, not just in this tournament, prior to it. They've the crowd, obviously big advantage as well, getting behind them, and I think they might be too strong for France.
Okay. Good.
The other one is tough to call.
Yeah,
everybody's going to predict England, and everybody will think it's. I wouldn't say a stroll in the park, but they'll think it's basically kind of that they only have to show up. Colombia beat Germany last weekend and were brilliant. They've been brilliant in the tournament. Not only are they very, very strong and very physical, as you'd expect, technically they're very good as well. The girl up front, Usme, who got the winner in the last round, and little Linda Caicedo plays on the left. She's outstanding. Ramirez, the centre forward. They will cause England a lot of problems. And of course, England have been very underwhelming so far in the tournament, Shane. But in saying that, I have to give credit to Serena Wiegmann, because there's been a lot of adversity so far in the build-up to the tournament, losing the players in the tournament as well. They lost Ciara Walsh, now she's back, then descending off with Lauren James as well, and they've got through every round. Even Nigeria put them under all sorts of pressure, and they were still able to withstand that, take at the penalties, and they were brilliant in the penalties. So far they've answered all the questions, but unlike Euros last year where it was literally a stroll to the trophy, bar maybe the final, this has been anything but, and they've had to answer questions in every round, but so far they're coming up with the answer, Shane.
Okay. Well, that is a very concise prediction. Will be interesting to see who prevails. You're on commentary for England-Colombia?
England-Colombia, really looking forward, because I've been so impressed with Colombia.
Good. Okay, 11:30 tomorrow. Lauren James, of course, 2-game ban, so she would, in theory, be back for the final if England do get there. Now, speaking of English football, I suppose, time to welcome Fergal Brennan and Peter Smith into the conversation, because the Premier League returns this evening with Burnley versus Manchester City. We'll be previewing that match and plenty more besides, and I suppose a broad preview as well. But Peter Smith, if I come to you first, because you are at Burnley versus Manchester City. The Premier League is back. How excited are you?
And the sun is shining and the pitch is in pristine condition and the water sprinklers are just giving it an extra sheen, and there's so much excitement in this town around this game tonight. Brilliant football played by Vincent Kompany's Burnley last season, probably as good as anything that's ever been played in the Championship or second-tier level in English football. But they're moving up a notch tonight and they're facing one of the greatest teams in football history. So it's going to be a really intriguing 90 minutes.
It certainly is. Alan Colley, I know you're a big fan of Vincent Kompany.
I am, Shane, yeah. And obviously there's a documentary that dropped only last night, I think, on Sky, 4 episodes. So it was a bit of a blitz through that. And yeah, you can't but be impressed with him. Obviously the job that he's done has been phenomenal since he's gone into Burnley. Changed the whole kind of identity of the place, really. Not just on the pitch, but off the pitch as well. And Sean Dyche had done an unbelievable job. I was always impressed with Sean Dyche, and still very much am. I think he's a really good manager, but Kompany is very much in the mould of the modern way, playing out from the back, lots of young exciting players. They have a tough start obviously against Man City, but I think they'll give a good account of themselves, and I think they'll do well in the league as well, purely because of the manager that they have and the culture that he's built. And I also would have to give credit to the owners as well, Shane. They come across very well in the documentary. Okay. Obviously got a lot of stick when they come in at first, coming in from America from the outside, people suggesting they didn't really know what they're doing, they haven't a clue, but they were very, very shrewd in the appointment of company. And during that documentary, there's lots of insight into decision making that goes on at board level, down into the dressing room, the relationship to have a company, and it works very, very, very well from boardroom level down to the dressing room.
Okay. Well, I will be asking yourself, Alan, Peter and Fergal as well, predictions for the top four, bottom three, top goal scorer and indeed young breakout player. And just to give it away, my young breakout player is actually a Burnley player, but more on that shortly. Fergal Brennan, the league is returning and there are ongoing transfer sagas, to say the very least. What is the latest with Moises Caicedo? Because he was off to Liverpool, then he was off to Chelsea. Now he's followed Chelsea on Instagram and everything else. So
must mean he's gone next.
Yeah, exactly. This is the modern world we live in, Alan. Fergal, please distill it all for me.
Changeable, to steal a bit of a kind of weather forecast analogy, is very, very changeable. I was at Jurgen Klopp's press conference this morning and he was as straightforward about the situation as can be. And he's normally not so candid about transfers, but he confirmed that a deal had been agreed with Brighton. But as we all know, that's only one part of the jigsaw for any major Premier League transfer. You have to talk about salaries and contracts and image rights and various other bits and pieces. And Jurgen Klopp kind of held his hands up and said, myself, the club, we've done our part. The rest of it is effectively on Moises Caicedo. And that's effectively where things have kind of stalled. As it stands, he hasn't joined either of them. Don't expect it to be completed this weekend. And obviously they're playing each other in the Moises Caicedo derby on Sunday. I don't think he'll be wearing a red shirt or a blue shirt by Sunday. It won't be done that quickly. Effectively, Brighton have accepted Liverpool's bid. Rumoured to be about 110 million. Chelsea have offered a bit less, but the player himself, potentially, I don't want to speculate too much, because of the higher salary that Chelsea are offering him, is preferring that move. So it's kind of blocked at the moment. Brighton probably prefer to deal with Liverpool. We know, obviously, they've sold Alexis McAllister to them this summer already. They are happy for that deal to go ahead. I don't think they're unhappy with him going to Chelsea, but they want to get the maximum price for a really important player, almost regardless of what he might want on an individual level. So it's probably going to roll on for a few more days. I'd be very shocked if it's wrapped up before they play each other this weekend. And ultimately, it's an interesting one because it's very difficult to kind of label it as a greedy move. He's perfectly entitled to make this call himself. But Chelsea, for me, are still a bit of a mess. Pochettino's got a huge amount of work to do. You go to Liverpool, granted, they're also rebuilding as well, but Jurgen Klopp's got a plan in place. He's a very established manager in the Premier League. They've brought in two players that he's going to play with in Dominic Szoboszlai and McAllister, who was his teammate last year. That looks to be a more sensible move. You worry that if he goes to Chelsea, he's just another wildly expensive, talented player that's put into a team that has no shape and not really much of a clue of how to get the best from him.
Absolutely. Well, it will be interesting to see if there's any white smoke from Bayern Munich as well. Ange Postecoglou has confirmed that Harry Kane's departure is imminent. So that looks like it will be going through. And from an Irish perspective as well, just to round up, Crystal Palace, Jake O'Brien will undergo a medical today ahead of a €1 million move to Lyon. And Killian Phillips has left Palace on a season-long loan to Wickham Wanderers. Gents, let's broaden out the conversation in general about the Premier League returning. And Peter Smith, I want to come back to yourself because, as Max Rushton so elegantly put it in The Guardian above, the Premier League and all that comes with it returns. Autocratic states and soft power, racism, misogyny, tragedy, chanting, gambling, addiction, clickbait, corruption, concussion, brain injury, social media pylons, leverage debt and asset stripping owners. Yes, indeed, the best league in the world is back. Peter Smith, what are you most looking forward to?
Just trying to decipher all of that, actually. Can you give me half an hour, please?
On a positive note, Peter, I'm sure you're looking forward to some competition on the pitch and hopefully a competitive season.
Yeah, I think really when you say what are we looking forward to most, we hope, I think, for a competitive title race. Wouldn't it be great if we could have three or four and a really, really wide open one? But you know what, I just get the impression that City are that good, they could become the first team in English history to win four in a row. I know Liverpool have done it under the great Bob Paisley and the great Joe Fagan as well. Sir Alex has done it at Manchester United, but for Guardiola to get four consecutive titles, that would be something else. And I can't see past them, to be quite honest. They are that good. This is one of the greatest teams ever. But I do hope United push them, and I hope the Liverpool push them, and I think that Arsenal will be strong once again. But I would think that after 38 games, or probably less than that, City will probably be looking at their fourth title in consecutive seasons. I might be wrong, don't quote me on it, don't stick me to it, but no, I think City will win the title.
Alan Carley, would you agree with that summation?
It's hard to disagree with it, to be honest with you, Shane. And we all know how City, how good they are. But I'm actually going to go for Arsenal this year.
For the title?
Yeah, I am, yeah. Okay. Well, maybe not as blunt as that and say they'll win the title, but I definitely think they'll go very,
so
very
you've
close.
Only rolled back in it,
well,
like
not
10
really.
Seconds
no,
later.
No, I do. I am going to go for them. I am. I really am. And obviously predictions are hard, but I will go because I just think they've strengthened well in the off-season. I'm really impressed with Arteta. Obviously, the job that he's done, obviously, the last couple of years as well in terms of not just strengthening the 11, but I think he's building a squad that can compete with Man City. And obviously, he's learned from Guardiola, and that's what you need in terms of going toe-to-toe with the likes of them. And when you're firing on all fronts competition-wise as well, you need strength and depth. And I think he's brought that in this off-season. So I will go for him. I also think as well, with the likes of Chelsea, and I know Fergal made a few good points there with Pochettino in terms of the rebuild, but he's a brilliant manager. And if anyone's capable of doing that rebuild in quick fashion, if you like, I think, because there are serious players at his disposal, if you can sort out the mess, obviously, from the, I suppose, the boardroom down. And I think he will be good at that because he's good at managing up and not just managing, obviously, the players at his disposal. I think he'll be able to handle Todd Bowley, if you like. Also, I think United have improved and you would expect them to be a little bit better. And Liverpool is the interesting one for me because I know Fergal said, and he's right about maybe a better move for Casado to go with Liverpool because there's not as big of a rebuild. I would agree with him. I think if he was to go there and they strengthen like they have with McAllister, him and Szoboszlai, and you obviously have still a very good defence and excellent forwards, I think that puts them bang in contention as well. So because a lot of those teams underperformed last year and we were left with just Arsenal and Man City, I think you will have three or four in the mix this year, and I'm going to go for Arsenal.
Okay, Fergal, Brennan, will this be competitive and play out, I suppose, as we hope that there will be a couple of teams in contention?
No, I think it'll be pretty similar to last season. I think Man United will be a bit closer. I think Newcastle will dip. I think Liverpool will strengthen, and I fancy them to get into top four. That would be one of my picks for the season. But I think in terms of the lie of the land, I don't think it's changed that much. I agree with everything the two guys have said about Arsenal. I think obviously they've strengthened and clearly addressed both positionally and kind of squad mentality shortcomings that might have existed by bringing in Timber and Rice and Kai Havertz. But I still think City just... Gundogan's a very difficult player to replace. He's a very unique type of player that's very, very calm in his position. He keeps the ball very well, keeps everything ticking over. But he's got that ability to just, in a really important game, just suddenly appear in the box, bang, goal. And for a fella who's not really an attacking midfielder necessarily, to be able to guarantee you kind of 8 to 10 Premier League goals and big ones, that's difficult to replace. But I still think the old adage exists with City. When we get to February, March time, they just know how to just put their foot down or put their foot on Arsenal as they did last season. And we saw that in the two games between them, that the gap was there. I think the gap will get tighter. I think Declan Rice will do a big part of that for Arsenal. But that's still huge for Manchester City. And I think just a quick one on Josko Vardiol coming in. Pep Guardiola's really looking to address this idea of, I don't want any weakness, I don't want anything not pinned down in this team, I don't want any potential that a kind of more direct style team, you look at some of the teams that have come up in Sheffield United and Burnley and Luton, they're not afraid to get the ball in the box. Guardiola is a beast. I saw a video of him on Twitter the other day heading away a pint that someone threw on a pitch during a Leipzig game, and Guardiola will be hoping for that kind of thing with City this season. So yeah, I think it'll be much similar to last season. You know, the kind of slightly more romantic edge pushing for Arsenal, but City are just so, so strong.
On that chain, sorry as well, and obviously we know City are brilliant, as we said, but if you're looking for chinks in their armour, Gundogan going, and Mahrez is another one. Like, there's probably the guts of 25 goals and maybe 40 goal involvements in terms of assists as well. So that's a lot to replace. I know you have Haaland, who's a goal machine, But other than that, like, you're taking a good chunk, 30, 35 goals out of that team. And they haven't found a replacement really for Mahrez. Obviously Cole Palmer, but you won't be relying on him. He came on and scored a great goal in the Community Shield, but I don't think he's going to start him in games. Big question around Foden. I love Foden. I think he's an absolute superstar, but for some reason he's not in that team. He's not in the England team. He needs to find a way to get in that team. Vardy, old Fergal's right, is an absolutely brilliant player and a brilliant signing. But I do think if you're looking for chinks, that has slightly weakened them, Gundogan and Mahrez going.
Okay. Peter Smith, chinks in the City armour?
I'm not so sure if there is any. Where, really, when you look at the squad that they've got, they can bring so many different people in to change games. Defensively, they've reinforced as well. The bench is so strong. I'm not sure. Is there one? I can't think of one yet.
Okay. Well, we'll be interested to see how it pans out. Alan, in general, like, talk to me about the season ahead. Like, I mean, looking forward to it. There was a couple of articles in various newspapers anyway. New rules, keepers can't distract penalty takers, which I'm not for. Peter Drury on Sky instead of Martin Taylor. I'm all for that. What else should we look forward to in the Premier League season? What are going to be the big news stories as the season unfurls?
Yeah, it will be exciting. Like, I suppose in your intro there today, preview, like all those things that were reeled off, Shane. I've forgotten half of them already, but there must have been 10, 12 different things there that you reeled off. But
admittedly, they were somewhat negative. Okay.
Some of them, yeah. But we'll only focus on the positive, Shane. But no, we are excited. Obviously, it's great to have it back. It's going to kick off tonight. I think Burnley will be a massive addition to the league as well, just in terms of the new look Burnley, if you like, with company, for some of the reasons I outlined earlier. Luton will be a story, obviously, just with their ground alone and how they're going to fare in terms of teams going there and having to adapt to those surroundings that they're not used to, obviously, some of the bigger teams. So I think they'll be a story. Ogbeni is a player that we'll be looking out for to hopefully do well with the likes of Luton. So I think those teams coming up, Sheffield United, obviously John Egan, a couple from an Irish angle as well. But I do think those teams that are coming up, bar Burnley, will struggle. Just the gap is so big, and when you're stepping up from the Championship to the Premier League, I just think the gap is far too big for those to kind of establish themselves. They have financial problems as well, Sheffield United, so I think they will struggle, and Luton. But I think Burnley will acquit themselves well, and I'm looking forward just to see how company gets on. As I said, I'm a big fan of him. The top teams speak for themselves, and we've kind of spoken about them. Maybe the likes of Unai Emery as well was unbelievable when he came in. Could they be a dark horse to get into the top six? I think they can, but they lost Buendia during the week, who's a big loss. He did his ACL, which is unfortunate for him. But I think Unai Emery, Newcastle, can they maintain the form obviously from last season? I know you're going to ask us maybe in a couple of minutes about a breakout star, and I have a very, very left field one for you,
but okay,
I'll leave it there for
good,
now.
Good, good. On Luton, I'm a big fan of loyalty in football. It's not something we see very often, and Pelly Ruddock Mpanzu is set to become the first footballer to play for the same club in non-league, League 2, League 1, the Championship and the Premier League. He joined Luton in 2013 when they were in the Conference Premier.
Brilliant.
So that's,
they're the players we want.
That's what it's all about. Fergal Brennan, what news stories are you most looking forward to reporting on as the season unfurls?
I'm looking forward, and I think I speak for Alan, I think I speak for Peter, I think I speak for yourself, Shane, everybody in asking from a journalist commentator's perspective, what is the situation with all this added time? Because it's going to be adding all, I'm hearing a lot about player welfare and rest periods and game loads. This is adding a lot of work onto to people who are going to be covering games. There's going to be lots and lots of late nights between now and the end of the season. I mean, I'm messing, but I'm not. But I think we're going to see situations where, because of the change in the added time rule, which effectively now is that the stadium timer or the stadium clock will keep running, and then the referee, instead of having pre-agreed slots for this is how much added time for a sub, this is how much is for an injury, it's now going to be every second that is decided to be a time wasting or a stoppage or anything will be added on. And we're going to see huge added time, plus 10 minutes, I think, is going to be maybe not a regular thing, but we're definitely going to see it quite a few times, particularly as things start to settle down. And that in itself is going to lead to late goals, and it's going to lead to situations of teams, the big boys who are used to just kind of having everything their own way, your Burnleys, your Lutons, your Sheffield United, other teams like that, if they're playing a side 1-0 down, suddenly the board goes up, they're at home, there's 10 minutes of added time, they're going to think, we get a chance, we get a goal, this could be huge for us. So I think that's going to be really, really big, certainly in the first few weeks and couple of months. It's going to be controversial. Players fans are not going to like it unless it benefits their team and they get a winning goal. But I really think it's going to be something we're going to be talking about a lot for the next few weeks.
Yeah, that is actually very interesting. Peter Smith, I might come to yourselves because you're obviously on the beach or at Burnley Man City this evening and most weekends you're at a Premier League ground. How will this rule implementation change the Premier League matches, really?
I think it will, because obviously there are 9 subs you can select from. There are 5 substitutions or 5 players you can replace at various windows. I think it'll really change the face of it, to be quite honest. I was at a Championship game last Saturday and I was slightly unaware of this. I looked at the board when it went up, 8 minutes in the first half, and I think under last year's ruling and circumstances it probably would have been about 2. But as has been mentioned, you know, every single stoppage now is going to be accounted for, or anything deemed as time-wasting. I think as well there's meant to be a minute added on for each substitution. So regularly, I think there's going to be an extra 15 minutes. I know that the broadcasters have been concerned about it because of certain scheduling and that type of thing. And it's already been mentioned to the Premier League with prior concerns ahead of the big kickoff tonight. But I just think that everybody's going to have to get used to it. It's going to be an absolute nightmare for people who want to get away for trains and buses. You know, what do you do for the last train if you're in the away end? Do you wait and watch the last 9 or 11 minutes or however long it's going to be played? Or do you miss it and catch the train home? It's going to be, you know, problematic for supporters as well. I don't like it. Honestly, don't like it. But we're going to have to get used to it, whether we like it or not, unfortunately.
Absolutely. Premier League taking fan concerns into account, Alan, as always, you know, as always. Okay, gentlemen, prediction time. Peter Smith, I'm going to come to you last, so you've plenty of time to think about it. Fergal Brennan, can come to you second. Alan Colley, I'm going to put you on the spot, considering you're standing across from me. So, Alan Colley, prediction time is going to be top 4, bottom 3, top goal scorer, a young breakout player. Your top 4 predictions, Alan Colley.
Arsenal. Man City.
Okay.
Liverpool. Sorry. Liverpool ahead of them, and Chelsea.
Chelsea forward?
Yeah.
Even in all
Pochettino.
The chaos that
the
is going on.
The Pochettino factor.
Okay.
I think he'll do brilliant.
Okay.
Yeah.
Who's going down?
I think this was an easier one to predict, I'm hoping, but I think Luton will go down, Sheffield United, and Wolves.
And Wolves? Yeah. In that order, Wolves going to be
last.
Yeah,
and I know, I'm glad to see Gary O'Neill back, because he was obviously hard done by in terms of how he lost his job at Bournemouth, but I think there's a lot of trouble going on at Wolves as well, and to be coming in days before the start of the season, I don't think it's ideal, and he has a big job on his hands.
Okay, well, that is unfortunate for Matt Doherty, as we'll no doubt hear throughout the season and certain broadcasters. Top goal scorer?
Salah.
Mo Salah.
I think a lot of him during pre-season, and he just looks sharp. I think he'll have a big season. I think Liverpool have a good season, to be honest.
Okay, and your left of field young breakout star.
Yeah, and I'd love to see this happen, because there was a lot of talk about him in pre-season, about his performances and how well he played. And because the manager, I'm not going to name him just yet, he'll give it away, but because the manager, I think, is good at giving youth its chance as well, and will give him an opportunity, and I hope he does give him his opportunity, and it would be good from our perspective as well, because it's an area of the pitch where obviously we're struggling as well. Alex Murphy at Newcastle United, I think he'll emerge.
Okay.
And
he'll get game time in the Premier League.
Well, if you look at their left fulls, they're obviously after signing Livramento for 30 million. Yeah. They had Dan Byrne playing at left full last year. He did fine, and he did well, Dan Byrne, and he's liked at Newcastle. But you listen to any of the quotes from Botman and from a couple of the senior players, Trippier, about this young lad in pre-season, they were all mad about him. Okay. And I think he'll make his breakthrough. And once he makes his breakthrough at Newcastle, he will make his breakthrough with the national team. And he will solve our left back problem, Shane. I have it all sorted out.
I am loving the positivity.
No, but I'd love to see him get a chance, and I think he will.
Absolutely, absolutely. Here's hoping. Fergal Brennan, starting with your top 4 predictions.
Not wildly different to Alan, I'll be honest. Man City top, Arsenal second, Manchester United third, and Liverpool fourth. I think Newcastle will slip out, and I think Chelsea will improve, but I don't think they'll get back in. I think Liverpool will get fourth. In terms of relegation, I'm going for 2 promoted sides to go down. Probably a toss of a coin between Luton and Sheffield United who gets bottom, but I think they'll both go down. I was tempted by Wolves, but I just think, given the situation, it could go one of 2 ways. It could be an absolute disaster, and unfortunately for Gary O'Neill, he'll be the manager that's kind of forced to deal with the situation. But I am quite worried about Fulham. And I'm going to go with them to have a big drop off. Alexander Mitrovic wants out. That remains to be seen whether he'll go. Marco Silva was offered a deal to go to Saudi Arabia and he gave a very unconvincing, no, I'm fine, I'm happy to stay here kind of a thing. And I just look at them as a squad. I think they're quite thin in a lot of important areas. They haven't really done a lot of business in the transfer window and they're very reliant. I know obviously he was banned last season for a period as he normally is, but they're very reliant on Mitrovic, and if he doesn't fire, that's a big problem. Yao Palhinha has got an injury. I'm not exactly sure when he'll be back, but he's massively important for them. And if he's not playing, that's a big hole in their midfield. So I'm going to go for Fulham. And I think Burnley with Company, I'm not predicting that they'll get top half, but I think they'll be okay. It's a very difficult ground to go to. I know that's a big cliche, but it's a very, very tough place to go to, Turf Moor. Vincent Kompany's a really good leader. The players respond well to him. And I think they'll just about be okay.
Okay, top goal scorer and young breakout player?
I'm going to steal from Alan, and I'm going to go with Salah as well. I think it's impossible, you might remind me of this in a few months' time, that Haaland repeats what he does. I don't think he'll have a bad season by any stretch, but I think Salah's consistency, it gets kind of forgotten that netting 20-plus Premier League goals for the majority of his time at Liverpool should be marvelled at. It is very, very impressive. The likelihood is that Harry Kane's going to be gone. Obviously, there's a bit of an asterisk next to that as we're talking tonight, but that then frees up a bit of space for Salah. I think with Arsenal, the goals are more spread across the front three with Saka, Martinelli and Jesus. Whereas I think with Salah, even though they do have Nunez and one or two others, he's still the dead eye and he takes penalties as well, which always beefs up his goal tally. My breakout player is a bit left field, not as left field as Alan's, I have to say. And I'm going for Kearney Chukwuemeka at Chelsea. I'll go back to what I said about Chelsea and Pochettino before, in that they do have a lot of work to do and that they are a little bit of a mess. But Pochettino is very good with young players, and there's a little bit of a similarity to Dele Alli in the way that Chukwuemeka plays. Very dynamic, good with the ball at his feet, can beat players, score goals. And you think back to a young Dele Alli, and he was fantastic for Tottenham with Mauricio Pochettino, and obviously we all hope that he gets back into the Everton team and playing football again. I think it's going to be an odd season at Chelsea, but it could be the perfect environment for someone like Chukwuemeka, because he's not got the pressure on him that Enzo Fernandez has, or potentially Caicedo, or all these other players that are coming with this huge amount of money. He'll just be allowed to play football, and he's a very, very talented young man.
Okay, will be interesting to see how he gets on against Liverpool on Sunday. Peter Smith, I'm going to make your job a little bit easier because we're a bit pushed for time. I'm just going to come to you with your top four and bottom three predictions.
Okay, I can do it quickly. City, United, Arsenal, Liverpool in that order. 18th, Bournemouth, Sheffield United, 19th, Luton, 20th. Erling Haaland for 30 goals, and Manuel Benson, my young pup for the new campaign.
He's exciting, Benson. I'm with you on that one, Peter.
Peter Smith, thank you very much. Enjoy Burnley versus Manchester City. Fergal Brennan, thank you very much. We'll be chatting throughout the season. Alan Colley, you're sticking around the chat, League of Ireland, but up next it's golf and racing. Sorry, show jumping, I should say, with Brendan McCarr. That's all happening here in Game On 2FM.
RTE
2FM.
Game On.
Golf.
Now, Greg Allen joins us from Walton Heath Golf Club on day two of the Women's British Open. Greg, what has been happening today?
Well, from the Irish perspective, Leona Maguire and Stephanie Meadow have made the cut. That would be the least of their ambitions, of course. They're not that far away from where second place is, but the runaway leader is the problem, and that runaway leader is five shots clear on 10 under par after rounds of 68 and 66, and that's Ali Ewing, the American Solheim Cup player, who is the match play champion on the LPGA Tour last year, and is a good player, and not the type of player you want to have five shots clear of the field, but not insurmountable by any means. Over the next 2 days, she leads by five from a group which includes Charlie Hull, the big local favourite here. But back on level par is Leona Maguire. Real up and down day for her today. A second consecutive round of 72, but it could hardly have been more contrasting to yesterday's steady level par round, where very little out of the ordinary happened. Today, there were three putts of between 10 and 20 feet, which went in the hole, but she also struggled really badly at times on the greens. That's so untypical of her. She missed two from inside 5 feet. Her pace was off. She was leaving putts short, hitting them long. It killed her momentum, she said. But there were high moments as well, like a hybrid approach shot on the 14th hole, which rested 2 feet from the cup. That was critical because at that point she was on two over par and the cuts kind of projected at around two or three over. She was in danger of missing that cut, but she tapped that in for birdie and then holed that 20-footer on the 17th for a second birdie and got in ultimately with a decent round, a second consecutive 72. And on level par after two rounds, she's certainly not without a chance of winning on Sunday, but she does possibly need Ali Ewing to come back to her. Hopefully she can produce a low round tomorrow. But this was her summation of today's round.
Felt like I played great. I just didn't putt very well. Didn't have good speed on the greens again today. They were quite slow actually today, especially in the afternoon. So it was a bit different from yesterday morning. But I felt like I played really, really well today. Had a lot of really nice shots, gave myself a lot of chances. Just, those few three putts are really a killer for momentum.
The little putt that you missed on the third, having started so well with the par save on the first and the 15-footer on the second, did that take some momentum away from your how you felt about charging towards the lead?
No, not really. It was sitting on the side of a slope, so it was a pretty little putt, and it just, on these greens, if there's not enough, I couldn't hit it with any pace, and when you can't hit it with pace, it just bobbles offline on these greens. So, no, it wasn't really. You're trying to play as well as you possibly can. I say, no, it wasn't really much of a factor.
Tell me, when you shoot 72 and 72 in a major where second place is 5 under, you know you're still in touch with the lead. Now, Ali Ewing possibly has to stall in the third or fourth rounds for you to have a good go at this, but you're still in this, aren't you?
Yeah, I mean, there's nothing to be said for that level par through two rounds of a major. I feel like I played well enough to shoot 4 or 5 under today. Just the three putts were all that held me back, really. So if I play as well as I did today and hold a few more putts tomorrow, there's no reason why I can't move up the leaderboard.
Is there something to do with the fact that the pace of the greens here is quite slow by comparison to what you get on the LPGA Tour, and that's the only thing you need to work on?
Yeah, I mean, I love fast greens, and these aren't that, but it's something you just have to adjust to, and do a little bit of practice now this evening, and we'll go again tomorrow.
Interesting that last year Leona Maguire charged from way off the lead on the final day with around a 65 at Muirfield in this championship to finish tied for fourth place. She knows what's possible over the weekend, as does Stephanie Meadow, who incidentally of course had a great major championship in the second major of the year in Baltusrol back in June when she was third in the PGA championship, came down the last hole of par 5 needing to birdie that to get into a playoff. She didn't birdie it, but third place gives her a lot of feeling that a major championship is something in which she can achieve something in, especially here in this Women's Open Championship. Today she posted around a 74 and she'll safely make the cut on one over par.
Thought I played pretty good today. Wasn't that much different than yesterday. Just, you know, I didn't make the birdie on 16, which was, you know, an easy par 5 today, so that obviously hurt me. But, you know, and just didn't really roll in any putt, or I guess, well, I had a few putt. I don't know. It's just this golf course, right? Sometimes the pins, you just can't go at them. But overall, I mean, I still feel happy with where my game's at. Just kind of wait and see and hope I play the weekend.
Yeah, obviously hoping you play the weekend, because one over, it does look like probably the way the cuts go in the afternoon, you'll be okay, but fingers crossed. But to play at the weekend, how important for you is it though, you know, this, because you've had a season which has had a fantastic performance in the PGA Championship where you were third, but lots of missed cuts. But to make it in a major with this type of money and also prestige is important.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you always want to make the cut in a major. You know, obviously, you know, money is, it's a nice bonus. But you know, just to be able to play the weekend and try to put together a good finish again. You know, it has been a little bit sporadic, but, you know, that's kind of golf. It's like when you play your good weeks, you better be playing really good. So, you know, so hopefully I can just get another run at it. And, you know, obviously the scores are pretty tight. I mean, well, I know Ali's like way out at the minute, but, you know, other than that, everybody's pretty bunched. So I feel like, you know, if you play a decent round on the weekend, you're going to jump big time.
So Stephanie Meadow back on one over par after a 74. Leona Maguire one shot better on level par after a 72. That is 10 shots off the lead, and that leader is Ali Ewing, who's been mentioned several times in this report. 10 under par, an astonishing total on what's a tough course. 6,900 yards is playing almost, and she, Ali Ewing that is 5 shots clear of the group on 5 under par, which includes Charlie Hull, who shot a brilliant round today of 68, and 69s for Minima Katsu of Japan to get to 5 under, and Andrea Lee shot a 68 to get to 5 under, and that trio tracking the leader, Ali Ewing, 5 shots clear of the field on 10 under par. And as I said, Leona Maguire needs a low round tomorrow to do what she did last year and get herself into contention. Currently level par, 10 off the lead, but only 5 strokes off second place.
Okay, great stuff, Greg. Alan, thank you very much. Just a round up golf, and the PGA Tour, the FedEx Rory McIlroy is 4 under through three shots off the lead. Seamus Power is further down the field, one over through six overall. Okay, from golf to show jumping, Brendan McCardle is joining us live from the RDS on the Aga Khan Day at the Dublin Horse Show Festival. Brendan, unfortunately Ireland didn't retain the trophy.
Shane, they didn't, but they give it a real good shot here this afternoon. They just weren't good enough. They finished the two rounds on a total of 12 faults. The team, Michael Duffy and Sinke, four faults in the first round, unclear in the second. Mikey Pender, HHS Calais, four in both rounds. Keane O'Connor and Eve, they were four faults in the first round and then delivered that brilliant clear in round number two. And Shane Sweetman with James Can Cruz, clear in round one and didn't have to go in round two because it wasn't going to improve the overall score. The water fence here this afternoon was the big bogey for the Irish side. Both Michael Duffy and Mikey Pender had faults at that. But the winners were Switzerland. They jumped over the two rounds and finished on a grand total of zero penalties. They had a world-class field with them here this afternoon. Steve Gurdat was first out, double clear. Brian Balsinger, he was four and clear. Martin Fuchs, the former world number one, double clear for him this afternoon. And Edward Smith, he was double clear as well. So the Switzerland. It was 1983 when they last won it, so it took them 40 years to reclaim the title here at Dublin. But they have a lot of history here in Dublin because they won the inaugural Aga Khan Trophy back in 1926. Also a popular third place here this afternoon was Mexico. Remember they won it back in 2018, and of course on that team that time was for Nico Fernandez, and he was part of the double clear here as well this afternoon. But Michael Blake was the Irish team manager. He of course was very upbeat before today's Aga Khan run, and whenever the two rounds was over and the result was final, I caught up with him and he explained to me how disappointed he was with the overall result.
I suppose I'm disappointed with the result. Obviously, you know, the water played a little part in it in the first round. Maybe the wall backed them up a little bit. Michael Duffy looked to have a lovely ride to the water and the mare just had a little look. I thought he rode brilliantly well. We changed plan a little and sent him on one less in the second round, and normally the water wouldn't cause us any problem, and it just caught us out by a little bit surprise today. I suppose Keane's horse went a bit green, but you know, he came back and rescued it. Michael Duffy did a fantastic second round, and Michael Pender rode really, really well, and he, you know, he finished up 4-4. We're going to be second here without jumping James Can Cruz, and the Europeans are on like in 2 weeks' time, so I'm going to spare that round for when we need it to help us win a medal in 2 weeks' time.
So, and you're not surprised that the Swiss actually came and won it? It took them 40 years to win it.
It did, but they brought all guns. They were having a really hard time. They've got it together a little bit in the last month or two, and they're surprisingly that they're the best team in the world that haven't qualified for the Olympics. But I'm sure they're going to remedy that quite soon. They have a real strength and depth of horses and great horsemen. And congratulations to them.
Well done to you and the team. A solid performance. Back next year to hopefully regain it.
Hopefully, yeah. But you know, it's still sore.
That was Brendan McCardle chatting to Michael Blake. Before we take a break, just news from the European Under-23 Swimming Championships. Mona McSharry has claimed their first ever European Under-23 gold in the women's 50-metre breaststroke, and Ireland are back on the podium. Ellen Walsh claimed silver in the 100-metre butterfly. So, Alan Colley's still here. We're going to be chatting League of Ireland in 90 seconds' time.
RTE 2FM.
Big news! The Centra Big Brand sale is now on, with big savings on the big brand names you love, like selected biscuits and Nature Valley bars, any 3 for €5. Plus Centra Parbone chicken breast, 610 gram, only €5.50. And Peroni and Tiger 12 bottle packs, €17 each. So shop smart, feel good. Centra. Live every day. Enjoy it all sensibly.
To all the fans out there, we know how much you care. To everyone who believes this could be their year.
What a goal!
We're always here. The glory and the strife, the memories, this is our life.
Over the bar!
Wherever your team or heroes roam, there's one place we can all call home. The Irish Examiner. For sports writing as committed as you are. Buy the Irish Examiner in store or subscribe at irishexaminer.com, where sport lives.
What gives you more while you're holding less?
Ooh, is it a mini dumbbell? More gain, less pain?
No. It's my new Samsung Galaxy Z Flip 5. It unfolds and stands upright to take hands-free pics.
Useful.
Want to snap these guns?
Join the flip side and buy the Galaxy Z Flip 5 from Samsung.com. Get up to €500 off when you trade in your old smartphone. Purchase by 30th of September. €500 based on the Galaxy Z Flip 4, 128GB. Values vary by model and condition. T's and C's apply.
Game on.
Football.
Now, you're very welcome back to Game On. Time to chat League of Ireland. Alan Colley, this evening is one of the most important rounds of League of Ireland Premier Division action. Several sides facing critical games. Top of the table, a somewhat stuttering Shamrock Rovers side go to one of the most difficult venues in the division. Shelburne's record of just 2 defeats in 13 home games with just 10 goals conceded show how much of a struggle it has been for visiting sides in Tolka Park. Will it be more of the same this evening?
I think it'll be a tough game, Shane. And we're coming down to the business end, which is brilliant. There's only 10 games to go, as you said. There's so many critical games, top and bottom. And it's a huge game for Shamrock Rovers because just across the Liffey, obviously Pat's second are playing third. Pat's and Bohemians, and they are very much still in the title race. And I suppose the result of that will determine just how they're feeling about that title race as well come maybe 10 o'clock tonight. Mm. But I still think there's three or four teams very much in the mix, and obviously Derry as well, who are not playing tonight, but they have a big game Sunday. So I think Shelburne could put a spanner in the works tonight for Shamrock Rovers. Their form, obviously, of late has been very inconsistent throughout the whole season, not just of late. But that was a big win against Cork on Sunday, and they'll be hoping that'll put them back on track to obviously go on and win the league title. But Shelburne have a really good home record, as you say, and I think they will put it up to Shamrock Rovers tonight. I think it could be a draw.
Okay, well, here's hoping for a Shells
win. Will you take a draw?
I'll take a draw. I'd bite your hand off for a draw against Shamrock Rovers. Pat Spose, who's going to...
Yeah, this is a huge game. I would have to go with the form team and the home team, and that's St. Pat's. I know Bows have won their last two league games, but that was against UCD and Drogheda, and they made heavy weather of it. I was down in Dalymount last week, and Drogheda, even with 10 men, caused them all sorts of problems. So even though Bohemians are sitting third and they're only 5 points behind and they're very much in the title race, I can't see them winning the title.
Okay.
I can't at all.
I agree.
No, I can't. And I never had them down as title challengers, to be honest with you, Shane, from the start. And that's just being fair to Declan. It's his first full season. And something similar, I suppose, with John Daly. He's come in as well. Mm. There's no real pressure on him, but he's done brilliant since he's come in. And he's put them in a position where they are in the race. But if they weren't to win the league, there's no kind of criticism towards him or Declan, I don't feel, even though they're in the race. I still think Derry are the best equipped to challenge Shamrock Rovers. But I'm hoping Pats and Bows can stay in it as long as possible so that we do still have maybe three teams and just make it interesting for us as well. But I think Pats will get the edge over Bows tonight because their form has been absolutely brilliant for weeks now. I know John, our producer, will be delighted with that. But don't be taking my predictions. There's a fella calling me a cowboy on the text machine here for saying Harry Kane wouldn't go.
Well, Jonathan Afolabi be calling you a spoofer as well because he certainly has a sight set on Bows winning the league title. Two other matches this evening, Dundalk Sligo and Cork UCD. Sligo, of course, no Max Matta. He's gone to Shrewsbury. And Luke McNichols, their goalkeeper, is gone to Wrexham as well. So problems increase for Sligo.
Yeah, it's a bizarre one, Shane. I tweeted about this earlier on. I just don't see the merits in obviously letting your keeper go on loan at this stage. Now, the club will obviously have reasons, and I'm sure there's financial implications as to why he's gone on loan first and then maybe a permanent deal in January. But just because of the threat of relegation and them still very much in a dogfight, I think it's a gamble, and it's a big gamble if they were to get right drawn into that. Obviously, they're 7 points clear of Cork at the moment, but Cork are playing UCD tonight. You would expect them to win, and then it's back to 4 points because I don't think Sligo Rovers will get anything in Dundalk. Their form has been so poor for a number of weeks, and now, as you say, without Mata, without your first-choice goalkeeper, it's going to be a tough end to the season for Sligo Rovers.
Okay, well, enjoy Tolka Park this evening. Alan Colley, thank you very much.
Game on.
Racing.
To finish up Game On, we are going to chat racing with Jane Mangan. Jane, you're at the Curragh this weekend with Racing TV. Firstly, talk to me about tomorrow's feature, the Group 1 Phoenix Stakes at 20-5.
Yes, Shane, I'm there tomorrow for the first juvenile Group 1 of the European season. So basically, in simple English, that's the first top-level race for two-year-olds in Europe. And it's happening free of charge tomorrow because it's free entry for anybody who wants to go racing to the Curragh tomorrow. The first race of eight races is at 10-2. And as you say, I will be ringside for the Phoenix Stakes, which has attracted a field of seven declared runners. Aidan O'Brien has an extremely good record in this race, 17 previous wins, but until Little Big Bear last year, he hadn't won it since Sioux Nation in 2017. So he can be beaten. He's two in here are unquestionable, and His Majesty Unquestionable is currently your market leader. Arguably, if you want to go and see the best jockey in the world, you'll find him at the Curragh. That is Ryan Moore, who will be riding Unquestionable. But he was beaten the last time we saw him in the Railway Stakes behind a horse called Buccaneer Fuerte. And if I was making the market, I'd make him favourite. He's the highest rated horse in the race. Kevin Stott from the UK is coming over to ride him for his boss, Kia Drabshan. And Adrian Murray has every reason to believe that he's going to train his first Group 1 winner tomorrow, because Buccaneer Fuerte has had a stellar season in his three runs to date, and I think they're the main two. But I must mention the filly in the race. The last filly to win the Phoenix Stakes is La Calina back in 2011, and Porta Fortuna is 3 from 3 this season, and we haven't seen her since she won the Albany at Royal Ascot for Dunica O'Brien. Frankie Dettori was on board on that occasion. Oisin Murphy is over to take the ride on her on this occasion. She beat Matrika at Ascot. Matrika has won since, so that tells us that the form is strong. I must also mention Give Me the Beat Boys. Jessica Harrington put him away after he was fourth in the Coventry behind River Tiber at Ascot. He'll be hoping to make his presence felt. Shane Foley, who's won this race twice already with Lucky Vega and Ebro River, will be hoping to make it a hat-trick of wins in the Group 1.
Okay, good stuff. Double barrel question for you, Jane. What else catches your eye tomorrow and indeed on Sunday at the Curragh?
Yes, so tomorrow there's a couple of maidens at the start of the card. There's a horse called Diego Velasquez, really well bred in the first race, and I'm hearing positive vibes about him. So let's see if he can do good stuff in the 140. The 325 is the Phoenix Sprint Stakes. That's the Group 3 over 6 furlongs, Comanche Falls. The British have been putting us in our place when it comes to the sprints this season and every season. So Comanche Falls will be hard to beat in the Group 3 at 325. There's also a domestic action at Kilbeggan and Downpatrick Saturday, Sunday, but of course we're back at the Curragh on Sunday as well, with the likes of Alanya and Azazat catching my eye in the John Kennedy Memorial, the 10 furlong group listed race at 10 to 4 on Sunday. But there's one other race I want to mention, Shane, before you let me go, and that's coming from France.
Okay. What's going on in France, Jane?
It doesn't have an Irish runner, so you're thinking, oh, why are we bothering? But it's Prix-Jacques Le Marois, okay? And this is a Group 1 over a mile, and it could, for the autumn, steer us in a direction that maybe a horse we might see at Leopardstown on Irish Champions weekend and maybe the Irish Champions Stakes. Big Rock is the horse that was second in the Prix de Jockey Club. He's dropping back in trip to run on this. Onesto, a horse that was just beaten at Leopardstown last year, he's making his seasonal reappearance in this race. I wonder, is it with a view to coming to Ireland in September? Inspiral, very disappointing behind Paddington at Goodwood last week. She's turning back quickly here. And the Irishman, now based in the UK, Kevin Ryan, trains two very good chances in this. Triple Time, who won the Queen Anne at Ascot, and High Royal, who's been placed in both guineas this year. He runs both of those horses. Neil Callan riding Triple Time, and William Buey coming in for the spare on High Royal. So that's a really good race. If anybody's bored, I'm sure you're all going to be watching the RDS. Ruby and Brendan, everybody's doing a great job. We were beaten by a better team today, but wasn't it wonderful entertainment? The gasps from the crowd tell you all you need to know. Show jumping has you on the edge of your seat as well.
Absolutely, very much looking forward to the puissance at the weekend. Jane Mangan, best of luck in the Curragh. Thank you very much. Big thanks to John Farrell and Laura Lee Davis. I'll chat to you again on Monday. The official chart show is up next, so stay tuned to 2FM. But from all of the Game On team, have a great weekend. It's bye for now. RTE 2FM.